This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My name is Alan Scott. This is the place where government actions come face-to-face with business decisions, online at www.bgov.com, and of course on the air right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This week, we're opening up our medical bag to bring you the story of a two-year-old who suffers such severe seizures. Marijuana, they say, is about the only thing that will help her. However, she happens to live in the great state of New Jersey, where Governor Chris Christie isn't sure she should get it. We'll bring you Vivian's story, as told by Bloomberg reporter Terrence Dopp shortly. But we'll kick off the program with an analysis of the recent change in deployment of the Affordable Care Act's employer mandate, now set for 2015. Is this a good thing? Here with more is BGov's Director of Healthcare Analysis, Mr. Matt Berry. How are you?
I'm doing good, Alan.
So the Obama administration's pushed this employee mandate back to 2015. There has been so much of an outcry about this. All you hear is I'm going to have to pay X, Y. I can't afford to do this, that, and the other. Did he listen? Is there a reason? Has he said why this has happened?
Well, I think it's clearly a response to the outcry from the business community that was concerned not just with the costs of providing coverage to their employees, but also there's a lot of paperwork. There's a lot of logistical effort involved, both among the employers and for the administration as well. So I think of the things that they could give on the law, this was probably the easiest from a political standpoint. They could say, look like they're accommodating the business concerns of employers, and certainly in an economy that is still somewhat fragile and recovering from the recession, that they can do this without a lot of blowback politically, especially from their own supporters, and I think it mutes some of the concern among opposition to the law. So of the things that they could do, this is probably the low-hanging fruit.
Okay, so here I am playing devil's advocate. I can see both sides of the coin here. I can understand why employers could be upset at the amount of money this is going to cost them in the long run. But I can also see the president's side where you've had a year to figure this out. You've known it was coming. It's not like they were hiding anything.
It's not that they're hiding anything. I think you have to take a step back and realize that even under the best of circumstances, you take away all the political rhetoric, you take away the Supreme Court case, all the kind of the distractions that have surrounded this law.
There have been quite a few around this one.
Yes, quite a few. You take all that away, this is still a highly complicated law to implement, even under the best of circumstances.
Okay.
I mean, you could look at Medicaid and Medicare. Those programs are 5 decades old, and they're still figuring it out.
They're still broken.
So this is still just, I think you got to put this in some context. Yes, they've had a year or more, to get ready for this. But there are a lot of moving pieces to this, and I think add to it the politics of it. And the decision isn't surprising. I think some people said they were surprised by it. I wasn't as surprised maybe as some were.
Could this be considered a blow to the integrity of the act itself? It's broken. He's held off.
It could certainly be perceived that way. A concession to maybe the practical reality of things, maybe an admission of there's real bigger problems here. I don't think so. I think what will tell the truth on that question is if there's another shoe to drop in the coming months, if the administration decides to kind of extend this same approach to the individual mandate in the insurance exchanges or possibly to Medicaid. I would say while unlikely to happen, if another shoe were to drop, it would probably be around the individual mandate and the insurance exchanges, because I think that those are actually more complicated than the employer mandate, right, which is not easy. But there's a lot more moving parts. There's all the different systems that the IRS and HHS have to implement and have to sync up with the state insurance exchanges and the Medicaid agencies and the other federal agencies involved. That there's a lot of work there, and I think they are scrambling right now to try and get it all in place. And I don't know if anybody really knows if it's going to work until they flip the switch in October.
So in the age of sequestration, here we are, the jobs, albeit the jobs numbers recently were very good, didn't quite, it was kind of surprising to a lot of economists going, wow, we actually created that many jobs this year. Granted, a lot of them were hotel, restaurant, part-time kind of employment, but people are being employed. This particular portion of the Affordable Care Act was going to lead to the creation of even more jobs as healthcare navigators on behalf of this Affordable Care Act. Those are now going to be delayed. Is there any pressure from the administration or from anyone to say, hey, look, this was going to create a lot of jobs and now they're gone? Has there been any blowback in that respect?
Not really. I mean, there has, the blowback has been pretty muted.
Really?
Really, it's been almost, I wouldn't say non-existent. A few eyebrows or statements of concern have been raised, but there really hasn't been a hard push. I think, again, if the administration takes the next step toward considering any delays in the individual mandate, I think you'll see the rhetoric and the concern ratchet up considerably. I mean, I think the concern is on the individual mandate, especially, is it's like a death by a thousand cuts. There's a lot of little things that have to happen that add up to a big thing. The most recent example, there's a report in the news that came out late yesterday or today from indicating that there's some technical guidance that the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid issued to insurers, saying that the software is not ready to implement differences in insurance premiums for smokers now that would allow insurers to charge an additional premium if you're a tobacco user starting next year. They say, for whatever reason, the software to do that is not ready, and it won't be ready for another year, so they're going to have to deal with that. So the question is, I mean, that's just one issue. How many of those things are there going to be that will add up and accumulate where you get to a point where you say, look, we just have to take a step back. This is not something we want to do, but we'll consider doing it. And to put a positive spin on if you're looking at this, if you're a supporter of the law, is if you're still concerned beyond the health law with something like a budget deal and a deficit, is if you delayed this law, especially the individual mandate, and even considered delaying the Medicaid expansion 1 year, those two actions alone would save close to $50 billion in just 1 year. If you wanted to have a budget deal, that's an easy way to do it, and it would be a side benefit of it. So it's not that they would link those two publicly, but it certainly would be a side benefit of it.
All right. You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, where my guest is Matt Berry. He's the Director of Healthcare Analysis for Bloomberg Government, and we're talking about the Affordable Care Act and the delay by the Obama administration in rolling out the employer mandate until 2015. In conjunction with that rollout, what does this now do to the expansion of Medicaid?
Ironically, I actually think it makes the Medicaid expansion more appealing, because even though the Supreme Court last year ruled that the law couldn't mandate that states expand their Medicaid programs, it essentially turned that expansion into an optional benefit.
And we're looking at a 50-50 split.
Yeah, right now you got about 25 states have said they will expand or are leaning toward expansion, and the others are not. Mm-hmm. And despite that, with all the other roilings in the sea there, with the employer mandate now being pushed off a year, question marks, I would say, about the individual mandate in the insurance exchanges, it's the Medicaid piece particularly from a business standpoint, if you're a healthcare provider, if you're a hospital or a nursing home or a managed care plan, that's actually increasingly a stable source of revenue, at least within the context of the Affordable Care Act. Granted, Medicaid is not the highest paying source of revenue that they're going to get, but it is a reliable, consistent source of revenue. And for some providers, there are certain managed care plans like Molina Healthcare and Centene Corporation and WellCare, who, while not the largest of the publicly traded plans, they get anywhere from 60 to over 90% of their revenue from Medicaid. So they're highly dependent, and they have a lot to benefit from an expansion, and a lot to lose out on if it doesn't happen. Yes, in my opinion, at least, the Medicaid expansion becomes a bit more attractive in this current environment where there's more uncertainty on the other parts of the law.
I would imagine lobbyists' shops' phones are ringing off the hook right now as people are trying to bend their ear to head to Congress to push this.
Well, I think they're going to push not only the members of Congress, but I think more so you're going to see the continuing pushing at the state level, because it's really those state legislatures and those governors who are the ones where it's in their lap right now to make a decision. So I think that's just going to continue. We've seen it. There's been some successes where, we've seen, like in Arizona, Governor Brewer, who was adamantly opposed to the entire law, became one of the biggest advocates of Medicaid expansion in recent months, and actually got that through her legislature at her own political peril, perhaps, but was successful. But we'll have to see, where that happens. I mean, with Governor Perry's announcement yesterday that he's going to be leaving office starting next year, is that going to change the dynamic at all in Texas? Texas has and Governor Perry have been, one of the most vocal opponents of the Affordable Care Act. Is his departure, would that possibly signal an opening there for the state to reconsider its decision, at least on the Medicaid expansion?
You wrote an article, actually a big study, available on BGov right now, targeting opportunities under Medicaid expansion, a state-by-state look at estimated 2014 spending. And amongst the states that plan on expanding and those who don't plan on expanding, looks like it's pretty clear along party lines. Is there any delineation here? And you mentioned someone's seat may very well be in jeopardy. Yeah. This is a pretty contentious argument.
It's contentious. I mean, from the outset, the states that have aligned themselves in favor of the law versus against was very clearly with a few exceptions on party lines. You actually saw that the best manifestation of that was in who was filing suit in the Supreme Court to stop the law. Of the 27 or so states that filed suit, I think all but one or two had governors that were Republican governors,
right.
And
their seats are in jeopardy.
Yeah, but you've seen that carry forward.
Sure.
There's been some, I think, reality checks since the Supreme Court ruling, where you've seen some of these governors back off. Rick Scott tried it in Florida, but was not successful. His legislature blocked that from happening. But I think the enticement of basically the federal government paying the entire bill for the expansion for the first 3 years, then as much as 90% through 2020 and beyond, it's a hard financial opportunity to continue to resist. I know a lot of governors have expressed concern, even at that, when they still have to kick in a small percentage. It's still a lot of money in some states, and I'm not going to disagree with that. But if you're looking at kind of weighing the costs and benefits of it, it's a hard, hard argument to resist. And certainly when you have the the large hospitals and health plans and nursing homes in your state starting to knock on your door saying that we would really like to see that this pass, because we would benefit. We'd also be able to provide more services in your community, and your constituents would like that. It gets harder and harder to resist. So, my expectation is, over the next couple of years, you'll see more and more states, start to make those changes, maybe more quietly than others have.
A few weeks ago, I had the opportunity to speak to Joe Scott, who is the chairman, CEO, president of Jersey City Medical Center. With regard to the Affordable Care Act and how his hospital, how he plans on handling this. His basic thought around it was that it will be the death of the urban hospital. The inner city hospital will go away and be swallowed up by a big conglomeration that can handle the costs that'll be associated with now this new procedure. The inner city urban areas, in his opinion, at least around Jersey City, were full of those who didn't have insurance. And they were receiving tax breaks by handling those cases. Well, with those people now walking in with insurance cards, that money's gone.
Well, that certainly was a trade-off when they passed the Affordable Care Act.
Right.
I think what he was referring to was something in the law, at least in Medicaid and Medicare statute, are called disproportionate share payments. Basically, it's compensating them for charity care.
Sure.
And the theory, at least in the law, is, okay, we provide insurance coverage now for the previously uninsured. You no longer need, at mm-hmm. least as much of this charity care money as we were previously giving you. The question is, you know, is it really going to be enough to offset those concerns? I honestly, from the moment I saw that provision in the law, I thought it will be an interesting time when those payments are scheduled to go away to see whether the hospitals really allow it to happen, yeah. or if they're going to, you know, kick and scream and let that money go away. Because it's, for some hospitals, it's a considerable amount of money.
Yeah.
Whether, you know, some of these inner city hospitals, some of these public nonprofit health and hospital systems are indeed attractive targets to a private company is a bigger question.
And in full disclosure, his company, his hospital was just acquired.
Yeah, some might be attractive targets, but for the most part, among the publicly traded hospitals, they have pretty low levels of revenue compared to their total revenue. About, usually, almost less than 10% of the revenue comes from Medicaid, and I think that's been an intentional object. You know,
put all your money in one
decision.
Basket.
Yeah. Although I think some of the decisions, some of those challenges of some of these inner city hospitals, or that it could be a rural hospital too, is it's beyond the Affordable Care Act. It's a lot of the transformation to electronic medical records and other administrative demands that just become so burdensome that they simply don't have the resources and capacity to do them. So you'll probably see some cherry picking of facilities by some of these companies, and more, whether it's merger and acquisition activity or consolidation, that wouldn't surprise me if that takes place. But I think there's yes, some of that might be coming from changes in the Affordable Care Act and how they're reimbursed, but there's probably also other factors at stake there too.
You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, where I'm sitting here with my guest, Matt Berry, the Director of Healthcare Analysis for Bloomberg Government. And we're talking about the Affordable Care Act and the delay by the Obama administration in rolling out the employer mandate. We did get a little off topic, but I got to tell you, your finger was right on the pulse of what is going on out in the environment, because Joe Scott also brought up electronic health records and the amount of money it's costing them to make that transition. They're well on their way, but this is not an easy task for healthcare organizations. And for those who aren't in the know, if you're going to a doctor's office now, you're probably going to see them roll in with a computer or an iPad or something. Yep. And you'll be able to, through a portal, the law basically says, through this portal, access your own medical records.
There's both there's a technical challenge mm-hmm. with this, and there's a monetary financial challenge involved here, and you know part of the challenge is a lot of these hospitals and physician groups are trying to take advantage. There's financial incentives in the Affordable Care Act right. and before that in other legislation to incentivize them to purchase these records up to a certain point in time, at which point if they haven't done it, then they actually start to get penalized. The problem is, in the rush to do that, some are making quite frankly poor purchasing decisions. They're purchasing systems and software that isn't right for them. I mean, we're the best practices out there. They take time. They work with the vendors. They make sure it works for what that hospital does and its culture, its the population it serves. And they haven't been making some very, very good purchasing decisions on some level. And you're going to see on the vendor side for these systems, I think you're going to see a lot of consolidation in the next year or two, because there's been this explosion in products and services, and that's going to collapse back down as you see more providers being more selective. They're smarter. They've learned maybe a hard lesson. They purchased the wrong thing the first time or even the second time around, and now they've got to do it right. And they've learned the hard lessons of what to do and what not to do.
Right.
So, but yeah, I mean, it's going to happen. It's a trend that's going to happen, and I think it's not going to slow down, because I think people's expectations in this current age is people, these things should be digitized. Everything else in their lives is, and you know, why should healthcare be any different?
Why not give you another password to remember?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
What's next in all of this? What do we have to look forward to as we look further down the affordable care pipeline?
Well, I think the biggest questions are, you know, can they pull this off? Can they pull the rabbit out of the hat on October 1? I think it's inevitable that they're going to, if they don't delay it, it's still inevitable that there are going to be problems.
Mm-hmm.
I think the question is how big those problems are, you know, what they involve in terms of, you know, how technical they are, but also how they manage from a PR standpoint the firestorm, because every problem is going to be magnified thousands of times by the opponents of this law, and making a lot of mountains out of molehills, and there may be some mountains out there too that they have to deal with. Again, I think they can survive this. The question is whether they have kind of the political will to do so, and whether, honestly, whether the technical issues that they're facing and challenges that they have to overcome, I think, which are considerable, can be overcome in the next 4 months. I think there are some legitimate open questions on that count, and you know, we'll have to see how that fares, and you know, we'll see going forward. Because if they can get through that initial bump, those bumps in the road, which are going to happen, once you get several million people enrolled in these exchanges, it'd be very hard to take it away from people.
Right.
All of a sudden, it's like, here's your healthcare. Oh, no, never mind. No, you don't. It's like, that's going to be where whatever your politics and views on this law are. It's hard to take something away from people once they've given it, and once they've really gone, taken the affirmative action of enrolling and signing up and making a choice. I think will be, you know, what we all have to look closely at going forward.
All right, I'm sure you will keep us abreast of everything that happens, and we thank you for that. His name is Matt Berry. He's the director of healthcare analysis for Bloomberg Government. More delays possible for healthcare law at crunch time is the insight, and of course, the big study that he put together, targeting opportunities under Medicaid expansion. Look for them both on BGov. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
With that, we put the wraps on yet another edition of Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact. Unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to speak to Bloomberg reporter Terrence Dopp about his latest piece, Christie Handed Pot for Tots Bill by New Jersey Democrats, referring to Vivian Wilson, 2 years old, who has a syndrome that forces her to have seizure after seizure after seizure. Turns out her mom works for a medical laboratory and does drug testing and is determined that medical marijuana will solve her problems. But the governor is a little hesitant to pass that along to teens and toddlers. We'll talk to Terrence at some point in the future to find out where all that stands. I also wanted to bring you along the same lines a story about MedBox. Have you heard about it? It's going to be coming to Washington, D.C. It's the dawn of the marijuana vending machine. Everything from M&M brownies to orange marijuana-infused water. It'll all be available right here in the District of Columbia. We'll talk about that again in the future. Follow us on Twitter at BGov. Follow me at Alan L. Scott. We'll be back next Thursday at 11 with plenty more to say about the business impact of government actions. For BGov's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, I'm Alan Scott.